Welcome back to DMnastics, the gym for Dungeon Masters to work out their minds. I am one of your hosts, DM Neil, a.k.a. Jote Maniac. And I am not alone, but I am also not with DM Celeste, a.k.a. DM Seawitch.
No, you are with DM Derek, a.k.a. How Not to DM. I gotta get my pump on.
Done. You're here in the gym. It's still very funny to me that, like, I work at a gym. And, like, this wasn't, like, that, this was just a shtick before, but, like, the amount of things that I could, like, that are genuinely applicable that I could say are, it would be too much. No one would find them entertaining or funny at all. And I would just.
I worked at a gym in college, actually. Yeah. So, you know.
So today we're talking about working in a gym. No, I'm just, today we're going to look at another article, because I thought that's the best place for you to start for your first training session in the gym. We're going to look at an article entitled Dungeons and Dragons, 9 Tips for Flavoring Spiritual Weapons. And this was brought to us by Marissa Fior, from The Gamer. And I thought it was a good article. And then I started reading it. And part of me is also just like, how have I not thought of these things? This is very straightforward. Why have I not done this?
You know, I thought very similar things. So with that in mind, let's jump right in. Will you spot me?
Yep. All right. What's number 9?
Number 9, a symbol that represents your character's deity, which is like the exact thing that everybody I know has always done.
Yeah. So 9 is there. And like, the subtle twist on 9 as it is presented is, like, is it showing up more as, like, the direct iconography of that deity that you represent? Like, oftentimes, like you're saying, oftentimes it's just, and I feel like maybe it's a carryover from 3rd edition, because I feel like 3rd edition really honed in on, like, what is the preferred weapon of your deity? That is what your spiritual weapon looks like. But it doesn't matter, because it's just, mechanically, it's just always going to do the same. It
force did damage,
not look like anything specific. Number 9, low-hanging fruit. I agree. Like, you could basically have it be your holy symbol floating in the air, causing that damage, flavoring it to appear as if it is hearkening to that god. Is it more demonic because it's you follow Asmodeus or Pelor, so it looks like a sun?
Yeah, I've had, like, waves, or I've had a hammer because they worship a god of the forge or of thunder, or, you know, whatever it might be. Side note, do you ever let your characters change the damage from force damage because of their arguments of serving a god who is some sort of other type, you know, some other kind of elemental something or other?
I would allow it.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't become a continued conversation, like if it's like, if, okay, like we, you know, player and DM, we both decide, yes, that's an understandable change. Then that's it though. For me, like, okay, then that's the damage we're going to use. We're not going to continue to have this conversation later when it seems like it'd be more beneficial.
Right.
To change. I mean, short of like a class feature that allows you to change it, then obviously that's totally fine.
That would be a cool class feature, actually. I am going to write that down.
Part of the wizard. So I'm playing a wizard where basically you get enough spells. And then one of your features is that as long as you have a spell in that level that does a certain type of damage, you can change the damage of other spells to that damage.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah, so the biggest requirement there is, like, getting all of those spells. And so basically level 1 is a super cheat where you just get chromatic orb and then you're just like, I can change anything. But it's later, like, if I have Fireball and Lightning Bolt, well, then technically I have Fireball. I have Fireball? Not really. But I have, oh my gosh, the words just left me. I have Lightning Ball and Firebolt as well. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would totally allow it though. Like if it was, like you were saying, if it was, water and they were saying bludgeoning, or if it was, fire or necrotic or radiant or, I'd allow it.
It almost would be fun to like have them roll on a table or something too, like make it a little chaotic. Anyway, interesting stuff. And we kind of touched on a few things that'll pop up later too. Okay. Number 8, animals as weapons. And this is the first one that I read that I was like, oh, I have not thought of this before, because obviously number 9 was so obvious.
Same.
But yeah, this one I was like, oh, of course. Like, you worship, I don't know, Odin, then maybe your spiritual weapon is one of his ravens. That'd be sweet. Yeah. You know, you got or something like that.
Yeah, or the Raven Queen, or some sort of Fenris, or you have more of an affinity to nature, so you choose a bear or whatever animal directly speaks to you, or you're a ranger and you've dipped a little into cleric, and so it's the other thing is like this is so close to find familiar in certain ways that it's like of course you could just make it an animal that would attack.
It's just flavor again, right? You know, it's just the force damage. Like, why couldn't it look like a wolf or you know? A bear or panther or any number of animals.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you're adhering to the rest of the mechanical features of the weapon, like, yeah, just a big glowing, shark. You do animals,
manta ray.
It's like there's a glowing platypus and it does force damage.
Why not? So many options.
Number 7, fists.
Another one that I read and I thought, of course, that would be really cool. You know, you are some kind of, I don't know, you know, if you're a cleric that likes to get down and dirty, maybe you took the tavern brawler feeders. I don't know, anything like that. It would be fun to flavor this as your fists are like an open hand that's slapping them or a finger that's flicking them if you want to get, you know, goofy, whatever it could be.
Yeah, and then like the example used is as drawn as people are to Mage Hand or Bigby's Hand or spells of that nature, it would make perfect sense to have the cleric kind of join in on that same type of fun. Like you have a wizard who's constantly using Mage Hand, the spiritual weapon pops up, it's a hand as well. And again, why not? Absolutely, why not? Like you said, they could be as kind of gruesome anime style fighting back and forth or just full-fledged Three Stooges where basically you're leveraging it to get your help action and do things like that.
Kind of reminds me of Master Hand from Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
All right, number 6. This one was interesting too. I'm less bought in on it, but it is interesting. Food items. The obvious example they give is Jester from Critical Role Season 2 using that giant lollipop just because, you know, she's kind of whimsical and it's fun, I guess. You know, they say, what if your character's deity is like a deity of abundance or drink or something like that, like a spiritual turkey leg or a stein of ale? Kind of funny. I feel like it's a lot less applicable or would happen less often, but still a good idea. I have a character right now in one of my games who is a bard, but he's like really focused in on cooking and stuff like that. So he occasionally will ask if it can take the shape of a frying pan. Dip in, or, you know, magic initiate. So he got a spiritual weapon as one of them that he chose from a different class. But yeah, like he'll use a frying pan again, very Three Stooges-esque, but you know, I guess that's kind of close to a food item.
Yeah, well, I think my go-to would be a dwarven cleric who uses a foaming mug and hits him. And I think of World of Warcraft, Tankard of Terror. But I physically have one, so that's what I think of. Just this giant stone mug just bashing around. And number 5, for all the Avatar fans that are out there, this one also immediately made me think of, why not? How have I not thought of this one either? Use the elements. Just make it literally just airbending or earthbending or literally you flavor it. The example here is like a crack in the earth pops open and like this basically axe made of stone flies out and attacks for you. Like,
yeah, like you're pulling weapons from the earth itself or whatever. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, you think of tons of different scenes of Avatar. You could, I feel like, easily flavor earthbending and waterbending and airbending all with force damage in mind, you know, a cyclone or whatever it might be that's smacking your enemies around. Yeah, a lot of fun you could have with that.
Number 4, constructs, modrons, and clockwork creatures.
Yeah, this, again, was one I hadn't put any thought into before. I have used modrons sparingly. I haven't really had a lot of artificers in my games before. So it just hasn't popped up for me. But with the right kind of world or the right character in mind, you could make it very fun without having to have a robot that follows you around all the time, a construct that you have built. It's just kind of like part of your connection with whatever deity it is that gives you this power to summon one for a fight.
Yeah, so this was the first one that like really, really made me start thinking about spiritual weapon in a different way. Uh-huh. The other ones were just like a lot of it felt the same, like the way I see it, but it's just taking on a different form. And the other things and the reasons why, and they're super cool and they can be really narrative and allow the player to have a lot of freedom with it. And like, depending on how that, you know, how that back and forth works, you as the DM having a lot. This is the first time though that I envisioned it not just as something that comes from nothing, but the idea of infusing it into something. So like, what if the character had like basically a Modron that doesn't do anything, they cast spiritual weapon, basically infusing it with their power. And then when the spell is done or the concentration is over, then it goes back. The same could be said of like what appears to be a very mundane weapon at their side. Or what if they're pulling off their holy symbol and throwing it off and infusing actual physical items that they have with their spiritual power to become the weapon. So yeah, this one like really rewired my brain on the possibilities.
Yeah, very similar to like a conjure spell, you know, conjure woodland creatures or animals or whatever it might be, flavor wise, but only using your bonus action, you know, that's pretty fun.
Yep. What's number three? Because I think it's super messed up.
Yeah. Number three, use your enemy's greatest fear, which is a lot of fun. Again, not one I had thought of, but just the idea of your deity knowing the enemy's fears and being able to exploit them is incredibly fun. And it adds more flavor on top in that you could decide, perhaps, if you're the DM, you could make something up, or you could have the player make something up if it's an enemy that is, you know, not very fleshed out and just needs something to appear. You know, there's a lot of fun layers you could add to this. And, you know, it's information that you could use to convey more information. Like if they're facing a rival or, you know, one of the big bad's lieutenants or whatever it might be, you could give them information by flavoring the spell this way that they might not otherwise know.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, yeah, but it's one of those ones where, like, I mean, you're definitely going to have to play back and forth with that and
yes,
be okay. And like, how are they obtaining that information as part of it? As long as, you know, as long as we're also ensuring they're not the direct fears of anyone else at the table. So right, you're not just right, playing super directly into, be it arachnophobia or something else. But I think it's also one of those things where it's like, you know, don't forget, Neil, there's clerics and paladins of all shapes and sizes.
Sure.
And apparently moral alignments. So
yeah,
if you're willing to basically, well, and also I'm like, okay, like if you really, really play it, am I giving you inspiration for this kind of narrative work, or am I giving you some other mechanical benefit of, you know, doing an intimidation check and now you can do it at advantage or something along those lines.
Sure, sure, you could do that. Yeah, it'd be interesting to reveal someone's deepest fears and then be able to use it against them in the future. So yeah, a great idea, but you make a very good point that this is one you definitely want to work with your DM on and player on before. A lot of these, to me, are like one-shot characters. Like, this would be a great one-shot character for me. I don't know if I would play a whole campaign with a character like this, just because I don't want to make it feel like I'm outshining the other players in my party and getting like bonus stuff on top of, you know, just the normal D8 damage that this spell deals. But yeah.
Number two, I don't know that I would do it. your deity's face. It's literally face to face, for better or worse, is what is the subtitle on this one. I don't think I would go this direction in the sense that I would almost go with like the, what do you want to say? Like kind of the spiritual representation of the deity, like more of like an avatar of them or a basic image of what the deity would look like that is then doing the force damage.
Like some kind of angel or demon or whatever that just pops up and is a servant of that particular deity.
Yeah. Cause I don't think I can get knowing my players and just kind of making a general assumption of most players, like, it's going to be a hard sell for me not to have a giant face, spiritual face show up and it not just be comedic gold for everyone at the table. Because, like, what are you doing? You shooting I-beams? Is it spitting at them? Is it biting them? Like, what are the methods by which it's doing the damage?
Or just, like, speaking words out of its mouth, condemning their actions, you know, and then taking force damage from the shame of committing sins or,
shame. So I think, like I said, I think it'd just be a hard sell. And I think, like, playing up the idea of, like you said, is it an avatar or is it the spiritual representation of some sort of thing tied to your deity rather than just the face?
Yeah, it's like a toned down version of spiritual guardians or whatever, right? If you flavor it like that. Yeah. All right. Last but not least, number one, use your environment. Again, not one I had thought of, but I think you could have a lot of fun in being creative with it. To me, it is very similar to like a telekinetic kind of person, right? Like I can control objects around me for a short time. Like the examples they give are you're in a forest and maybe you could pick up a log or pieces of rubble, like a brick from the building. You know, there's a lot of different ways you could go with this. A chair in the tavern. It's interesting. But to me, yeah, it reminds me of having telekinetic powers, picking that thing up with your mind, moving it around, bashing people with it. You could kind of flavor it like that and it could be kind of fun.
Yeah, get some real Jedi vibes. The other one I thought is like going back to like the way like I was rewired to say, you know, I just literally am looking around at my environment and I imbue that spiritual weapon energy into the random log that I find. And then it floats off and starts doing the dirty work. The other one, use of cobwebs, sounds just so funny and scary at the same time. Of just like you infuse it in cobwebs and it just like flies over into their face doing force damage. But yeah, it's. This one is nice because then it also, for me, and again, these are always ordered in an interesting way. Like for me, it's like, okay, did the writer think that this is like a 9-to-1? Like in one is like the ultimate. But with one, the like secondary benefit that I see of like kind of pushing things this direction is then you're possibly getting your players to think more about what is in their environment anyways. Rather than just what's on my character sheet or what's on that. And it's one of the things I've always thought about pulling over from Phoenix Dawn Command, because just the way that that game is structured is you always put out, basically you put out a card of things that are available in the room. And then they have a direct mechanical effect. And once you use that, though, you basically cross it off. And then you would have to figure out other ways to use the other things to get that same benefit. But again, working in the idea of like either asking more about the environment, which is fun as a DM to be able to describe that better, or as well as having the player like think more of like, okay, can I use that log? Can I jump off of this railing and swing across the chandelier? Can I do this? Are they super close? Is there a chair behind them? Can I use the classic method of just push them over and they fall backwards over the chair? Like,
right.
So that's the thing I think about most with this one is like, okay, can this help create more narrative thought processes for both me as the DM and them as the players?
Yeah, I definitely think it could. That's one thing that I find makes combats the most stale is if you are not giving your players any kind of way to interact with the environment around them. I love changing stuff, you know, on a certain turn count, you know, just giving them stuff to hide behind and also giving the enemies stuff to hide behind. You know, the more interactive they can be, the more it feels like an actual fight instead of just, you know, a chessboard and we, you know, you attack and then they attack and then you attack and, you know, that's it. It's pretty boring.
All of you players stand in one line and all of my monsters shall stand in the other.
Right.
And you will meet in the middle.
I don't know if you've ever watched the Viva La Dirt League's D&D logic videos.
Oh, I'll have to.
But they have one where there's like five orcs lined up and then the five players lined up and they're just like taking turns, like each of them goes and attacks. And then it's like the joke is that they're like trying to figure out like, why are we taking turns? Like, what are we doing? And they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, it's your turn. And he's like, what? Like, yeah, it's classic. You should go check that out if you haven't watched it yet. All you listeners out there.
We'll have a link to the article in the show notes, of course, but that means we've done it. Once again, and of course, if you want to let us know how you've been reflavoring Spiritual Weapon, you can always email us at dmnastics@gmail.com. And of course, if you head over to Twitter, you can find us at @DMS_block. I'm at @JokeManiac, and
I am at @HN2DM.
And of course, everything else for the network is at blockpartypodcastnetwork.com.
A huge thank you to the bards over at Bombarded for our intro/outro music. You can find out more about Bombarded at http://.
Nice.
You can find more about Bombarded at bombardedcast.com.
And of course, rather than let these mental gains go to waste, let's head to taking your supplements. Taking your supplements! Look at you doing the heavy lifting. What are we going to be talking about today that I did not have to go search for, and I am just excited to be along for the ride?
So, my good friend Cassie Mothwin is a game designer of some repute. She's been rising in the ranks lately. She's won a bunch of awards for some of the games that she and supplements she has written. But today we are chatting about one of the first things that she published herself, which is called What Crooked Roots? 15 Folk Horror Encounters for 5th Edition.
Nice. And
She took a ton of inspiration from folk horror movies and books, etc., and decided to make a supplement that you could use to kind of drop these encounters anywhere in any game that you're running. And she tried to make them system agnostic as well. She didn't put a bunch of stats in here or anything like that. So you can kind of homebrew the stats you want, or, you know, you don't, this doesn't need to spur any combat necessarily. But I loved the artwork that she put in this, and I also loved the content as well. There's a lot of really kind of creepy, weird things happening in the forest or out on the farm that you can kind of do while your players are traveling, or to freak them out in a new town they travel to, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And we'll have a link over to DriveThruRPG where you can purchase this, which you can also get a soft cover print on demand copy as well as a PDF. And it's currently a best gold seller, which is already speaks volumes, has quite a few reviews, basically got it sitting on 5 stars. If that's your thing, you think folk horror would be something you want to add, you may read it and find out that's not something you want to add, but I think you might. I think there's a lot here, and it already has a glowing review from Sly Flourish as well, so it's hard to argue with that. But with that, we'll turn out the lights and head out of the gym. But before we go, I want to implore you, the listener, to join the forums, the Discord, Twitter, and anywhere else you can find us and take part in these challenges, exercises, and other amazing conversations being had.
To do that, head over to bit.ly/DMBanter and try some DMnastics. So your players ask, do you even lift?